Welcome to CattleCast with Capital Area District Libraries Executive Director Scott Dymstra. This episode features a conversation with the Professor of Rock, Adam Reeder.
With over 4 million views to date, the Professor of Rock YouTube channel provides the stories behind the greatest songs of the rock era straight from the artists and writers who created them. Each episode is masterfully produced and hosted by my guest, Adam Reeder. Adam, welcome to CattleCast.
Oh, thank you very much. Great to be here, guys.
When did this love of music start for you?
You know, it started when I was, clear back before I can remember, 3 or 4 years old. I think we all remember those first few songs that we heard before we even knew what music was. We just knew that something different than, you know, talking or crying or laughing was happening in our ears, and something that takes you away because it's music. It's different than anything. And so that was probably about 1979, 1980. And so, you know, it was probably like Billy Joel, it's still rock and roll to me, you know, or I think, you know, so one of the first songs I ever remember was the Four Tops, Reach Out, I'll Be There. And I just remember how foreign that was to my ears and how it just lit up my soul. It just was amazing. So from there, it just became something where I couldn't get enough. I needed to seek out these songs. And luckily, my dad was big influence. He was a big music fan, and he passed away last year, unfortunately. But
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you very much. But it's interesting because our relationship became very strained for many years when I was a teenager, as father and son relationships happen. But there were two things we had in common. Everything else we just, you know, bashed heads on. But baseball and music, especially music, and music became this thing where, you know, this conversation that we could have. And he would tell me stories behind songs, you know, that he grew up with, 60s and 70s. And that's where I probably knew who, like, Elvis Presley was and the Beatles were before I knew who the stars of the day were. He was always, and he loved Motown, and he loved, he had this oldie station, you know, we had there in that small town. And there was all this this music, and he would just tell me about, oh, I remember this song, and I was... You know, I had this job at this grocery store, and I listened. I went out and bought the record before I went in and worked my shift, and I was so excited. And he'd bring new records home. My mom was into music as well, so they weren't singers or musical. They didn't play an instrument, but they always played records, and so that was it. And then I got into, like, you know, American Top 40 Countdown with Casey Kasem, and I listened every week religiously, probably 82, you know, I started listening to that, and I'd write down every position and memorize them. And I grew up in a small town in Idaho, so there wasn't a lot to do, so music was kind of my window to the world.
And all of us have a story related to this next question. What was the first album you owned?
I was thinking about that last night. There are albums that... your parents have. I mean, parents had a lot of records, and I would steal those records record on a cassette tape. But the first one that I bought with my own money that was mine was probably Billy Joel and Innocent Man. I bought it with my own money. I remember, you know, going down to the store and getting that, and you know, but I could be mistaken. It could have been, you know, Michael Jackson Thriller as well. Those were the first two records that I had and really influenced the rest of what was to come. So,
and both of those are fantastic first albums. So,
yeah, everybody had Michael Jackson Thriller, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I seriously, there's so many urban legends have gone around that, you know, it sold 100 million copies, 120 million copies worldwide. It's the biggest selling album of all time worldwide. And it's kind of neck and neck with the Eagles' greatest hits here in America. Though culturally, not to take anything away from the Eagles, because they're great. And I think it's really my dad's favorite group. But Michael Jackson Thriller, you're never going to convince me that that's not the biggest selling album in America ever, because everybody had it. Mm-hmm. It made an impact on everybody, every age. I've just never seen a pop star do that. It had rock and roll, R&B, pop in it. and the music videos. I mean, just the cultural impact of Thriller. The only thing I think that comes close at that time, you know, is Prince, Purple Rain.
Yep.
But those blockbusters were huge in the 80s, you know. And there's Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA, and the Madonna was coming out, and George Michael, and all these great artists, so...
You've done something that many of us dream about. You've taken your passion for music and turned it into a profession. So how did you do that?
It was a huge accident. I didn't know. I didn't know that this was my dream job. It is my dream job. I wouldn't trade it for any job, but it took me a long time to realize that. So I was in a band, you know, in high school, I sing. And so I was in a band, and then kind of an entrepreneur after that, in my 20s and 30s and did different things. And I put together a band in my 30s, and we started touring a little bit, and we won this award out of LA, and it was really cool. And I thought we might have a chance to either get a record deal or do something like that. But at the same time, I was having my first children. I wasn't a dad until I was about 33, 34. And I didn't want to have to go out on the road and be away from my kids. So I started a business, to teach kind of people how to market themselves. I had a friend that had a studio that was an engineer and marketing. I'd done a lot of stuff with sales and marketing. And so we put together this artist development company in the state of Utah, and we started to do this. And we had clients come in, and we helped them record their songs and teach them all that. And at about this moment, there was a general manager of ABC, the local ABC affiliate here, and he had come over from San Diego. He was over Fox in San Diego, and he came here to be the general manager, and he wanted to start up a music show. He had a music show up in San Diego that did really well for a long time. I think Maroon 5, their first appearance was on that before they were big. Wow. Anyway, he came, wanted to do this about local music. And he brought in myself along with, I don't know, six or seven other people that were going to be sponsors of this show. And because I had this music development company, he was interested in that. And he's talking about the show. And I kind of sheepishly raised my hand and said, I love the idea for the show, but they've tried that a lot of times here in Utah, and nobody really cares about local music. They should, but they don't until that band becomes like Imagine Dragons or Neon Trees. Those were the big bands that had made it from Utah. And I said, what if you were to get somebody that was like a touring through here, a bigger name, a bigger band, you know, touring through Utah, and did a little interview with them, and then use them as the headliner, and then use local music as the backdrop, and you could get more viewers. And he said, man, I love that. Love how your mind works. Why don't you help me produce the show? It's a real big opportunity. He took a big chance there because I'd never done anything like that. And make a long story short, about a month we were looking for a host. We really couldn't find anybody, interviewing different DJs and things. And a lot of people they liked one kind of music, but I liked everything. And so he just said, why don't you host it? Like, you have this cool look and the hat and the glasses and these bowling shirts and stuff. You know more about music than anybody I've ever seen. Let's do a test interview and see how you do. And my first interview was with Kenny Loggins.
Wow.
And,
cool.
Yeah. And I've always been a fan. So it's supposed to be about like a 15-minute interview, and ended up going 45 minutes, maybe even an hour. And, you know, about 15, 20 minutes in the interview, Kenny started saying things like, wow, how did you know that? Or, you know, one of the best interviews I've ever been involved with. And I thought, I didn't think much of it because I thought, I'm sure he tells everybody that, you know, I just didn't know. And then at the end of the interview, he, you know, said, well, hold on, before you end this interview, I want to say that this guy's going to be around for a long, long time. He's got what the classic guys had. He knows his stuff. And he pulled me aside after the interview, and he spent, you know, a little bit of time with me and just said, you really have a gift and you need to develop this and go after it. And so from there, I had all of these interviews, and, you know, now we're approaching, you know, we're between 500 and 600. I don't know exactly where we're at, but this show, we put this show on ABC, on the local ABC affiliate. It was on at 11:30 at night on a Sunday night, so not a great time. But we were on after the Oscars about 6 weeks after our show started. And we held that audience because that's our biggest night of the year. And all of a sudden, we were getting we had more viewers at that moment than in just Utah and the geographical location than like Jimmy Kimmel show did. And
wow.
So I was pretty blown away by the numbers and the support, and people just loved it. And I had to write, not only do these interviews, but I had to write, you know, four or five segments a week to be on the show. And so I had to come up with an hour long show every week. So it was really good training for me. I was working like, you know, 90 to 100 hours a week. And so it was really, really fun. And then from there, I met a gentleman named Dell Williams, who's become my producing partner. And we just started going after it. I said, I want to tell the story behind every song. He said, if you want to do that, we can do it. And so from there, we found, you know, private investors, and we just started going after it.
So did all that hard work, did all that preparation, all the hours you put in, did that lead to the moniker Professor of Rock?
It did. You know, it happened pretty early on. Beach Boys, I was interviewing them, and they said it. I think my general manager happened to hear that and said, you know, they said something like, wow, you know things about us that we don't even know. You know, they're like, you're like a professor of rock, if there were such a thing, like a professor of rock and roll. You know your history.
That is so cool.
And then he was
got that from the Beach Boys?
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, from there, the general manager, his name's Richard, said, that's what we're going to call you. We should call you the professor of rock. You know, professor of rock, pop, and soul is what it was back then. That's too many words. So it became professor of rock. And then from there, other people I've interviewed have said, you know, you're like the doctor of rock or the professor of rock. So it's stuck. And that's how it came about.
Speaking of the Beach Boys, you've interviewed some big names. You've interviewed Brian Wilson, Toto, Carlos Santana, Sammy Hagar, and Hearts and Wilson. Are there some interviews that stand out above the rest, and why?
Yeah, I think that there are. The two interviews that I was kind of like, I don't ever really get nervous, but two that I did get nervous for, Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, because he's a genius, musical genius, and yeah, he doesn't do many interviews, and he's one of my heroes, and so I was just freaking out, you know, and it was awesome. It was a great interview. Exceptional. And then Kevin Bacon, I interviewed him about the Bacon Brothers.
Cool.
It was just weird because it was like Kevin Bacon is sitting in a couch next to me, and I, you know, I'm like, I'm now, you know, 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon. Now everybody
exactly
I meet will only be 1 degree from Kevin Bacon. So it was cool. But you know, I love to interview the songwriters, if artists, you know, singers, But those who actually created the song, that's a lot of fun for me. Like Lamont Dozier of, you know, that wrote all the Motown songs, the Four Tops and the Supremes. It's just, it's such an honor to be with these legends who have written songs that are the soundtrack of generations and generations of people's lives. And to be able to hear those stories and firsthand is just, it's unbelievable. It really is. It's just such an opportunity. So those are the interviews that stand out for me are those who, you know, were part of that greatness. I think the 60s were the greatest decade ever for music. You had the Beatles and the Beach Boys and the Byrds and Bob Dylan and all this incredible Motown, all these things going on, James Brown. And to me, to hear those stories when so many crazy things were going on. There was the Vietnam War and civil rights movement and so many incredible things that music seemed to be, you know, the backdrop, the backbone of those moments. And to be able to hear those straight from the artists, it's perfection. It really is. It's just, I can't imagine. I always wanted to be in a rock band because I wanted to be a tribute to these heroes of mine. But to me, this is more of an access to do that and more of a platform to share those stories with future generations.
And related to that, who are those artists that you are on your interview wish list? Those that you haven't had the chance to interview yet, but you definitely want to.
Well, Sammy Hagar asked me this. He said, man, you're a great interview, my man. You know, seriously, who do you want? I'll get them for you. I'll try to help you out.
That's cool.
And I was like, all right. So, I mean, I didn't even have to think about it. I just blurted out, Billy Joel. He said, well, I don't really know Billy. He's an East Coast guy. I'm a West Coast guy. But Billy Joel would be number one. He's always been my hero. He's always been my my favorite. It's probably because he's the first, probably the first music I ever heard as a child. But Billy Joel, Bruce Springsteen, I kind of have this like this my Mount Rushmore, I guess, of music, you know, and everybody has it. But it would be Billy Joel, Bruce Springsteen, Frank Sinatra, and that's not going to happen. But yeah, he's one of my favorites. And then Morrissey, who is the lead singer of the Smiths, and I got into, you know, new wave and some of that music, and you know, when I was a teenager, you know, and stuff like that. So those would be the ones. Of course, Elvis Presley or John Lennon or James Brown, you know, those would be incredible interviews. They're of course gone, but you can always dream, right?
That's a great list already. I mean, any of those would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And I know this might be a difficult question for you. Top five songs of all time.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was thinking about this last night and I thought, you know, the problem with this, and I think it's not only my problem, it's a lot of people's problem, is this changes every day. My wife always teases me. She always says, honey, because I'll say, this is in my top 10 of all time. She'll say, honey, you have like 900 songs in your top 10 of all time. But if I had to say, I'll just take a crack at it here. I would say Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen. I just love that song. I was listening to that as a young kid in a small town in Idaho, just wanting to get out of my small town, bust out and do something great. And Born to Run was the motivator of that. I would say Billy Joel, Scenes from an Italian Restaurant would be one of those songs. Such a great song. One of those epic songs. I think the Beatles really were a huge influence on him. I would say In My Life by the Beatles would be up there. That's a great song and very nostalgic. And, you know, it makes me think of my dad and the connection now that he's gone. I would probably put in Human Nature by Michael Jackson. I just love his voice on that song. That's one of the early songs that I heard as a kid. I would have to throw in probably my last song. I would say something by the Smiths.
I love the Smiths.
Yeah. Something from The Queen Is Dead, either the title track, The Queen Is Dead, or maybe There's a Light That Never Goes Out. And, you know, honorable mention to Prince, you know, I think The Beautiful Ones, he just goes nuts at the very end of that song. And it just shows the genius of Prince. And then there's those feel-good songs, you know, or those songs that you remember. Don't Stop Believing by Journey is always one of those songs. And Eye of the Tiger, there's just songs that just make you think of childhood and great things like that. So on a different day, it'd be a completely different list. You know, I'm leaving out the Beatles and Motown. I'll Reach Out, I'll Be There. The Four Tops is up there. And Buffalo Springfield, For What It's Worth. Anyway, there's just so many great songs. So there's my crack at it.
And we always like to end on a library theme note. So any recommendations to our listeners for something that you're either reading, watching, or listening to?
Yeah, you know, I am reading The History of Rock and Roll, Volume 2. I'm trying to remember who the writer is. I'm not remembering off the top of my head, The History of Rock. And that's a great one. I'm always reading a book on music, so no surprise there. And what I'm watching right now, I'm watching The Chosen. I don't know if you've heard of that show. It's about the life of Jesus Christ, and it's really, it's really incredibly done. The production value is incredible and great acting and great to bring that story to life. And then listening to, I'm always listening to the artists that I'm interviewing. You know, I'm jumping into their catalog. So I just interviewed John Anderson, lead singer of Yes. And so I'm kind of on a Yes kick right now. I'm listening to a lot of Simple Minds because I just did a segment on them. And then Chicago Peter Cetera because I did a something on them. So that's kind of what I'm listening to right now. I my taste, as you know, is very eclectic. If you look at our YouTube channel, it's all over the place, and I just love everything. So, you know, one moment I'm giving a lot of respect to somebody like a band like Toto or The Clash. You know, to me, music is very subjective, but to me, it's, I don't believe in guilty pleasures. I think that you like what you like, and all music is great for different reasons.
And that's what we do in the library world as well. We cross genres, we cross authors. I totally understand you doing that. And Adam, thank you so much for spending the time with us today. It was a great interview.
Oh, thank you very much. Great questions.
The name of his channel on YouTube is Professor of Rock, so please check it out. We've included a link in the episode description, as well as a link for our Hoopla music collection. Adam, again, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Don't miss another great interview. Subscribe to the Cattlecast podcast and share it with a friend.
Hi, it's Sherry Jones with some good news. Capital Area District Libraries has reopened with contactless item pickup. Reserve items by placing a hold online or by calling a branch, then just schedule a time for pickup. Member and staff safety is the number one priority, so cattle will remain in compliance with CDC guidelines. For details about their contactless service, safety measures, and more, visit the library's website at cadl.org.